This is an audio presentation taken from the second International Conference on Transdisciplinary Imaging at the intersection between art, science and culture, recorded on Friday the 22nd of June 2012 at the Victorian College for the Arts, Federation Hall, Grant Street, South Bank, Melbourne. Keynote session chaired by Ross Harley. The keynote presentation, titled Images Revolution, Media Arts Challenge for Our Societies, presented by Oliver Grau.
Thanks very much, Paul. Great to see you all here and welcome everyone who's travelled some distance to make it here. It's my great pleasure today to introduce Professor Oliver Grau. Oliver is the head of image science at the Danube von Krems University in Austria. Oliver is known to many of you, I'm sure, as the author of the book Virtual Art, which is a great history of imagery and immersion in a wide historical framework. He's also the one of the founders of the Media Art History Conference Series and the Media Art History Organization. He's the editor of the Media Art History's book, published by MIT, and also of his most recent collection, which is called Imagery in the 21st Century. So it's my great pleasure to welcome Oliver here to Australia. He's in Melbourne for the second time, and I'd really like to welcome you to the stage now and present your paper. Thank you, Oliver.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Ross, very much for this invitation, bringing me here, having me here. Thank you for the colleagues yesterday for all the brilliant discussion. Although it was just mentioned, I'm fairly often asked where is this Danube University, and so it is a fairly new university, 10 years old only, near Vienna, on the beautiful countryside of the Wachau, which is a world cultural heritage, and we are split. We are in with one building in the very new part of the university, and then we're also based in a 900-year-old monastery, which is for our international students, and we have them all from all over the world. Always nice to be there, encaged in this monastery, and have this auretic atmosphere of that. So, and there we have a number of international programs, and also two databases. I will talk later a little bit about it. So it's also a very nice wine region, but you're familiar with that here anyway. So over the last 40 years, media art has evolved into a vivid contemporary factor. Digital art became, I would say, the art of our time, but has still not arrived in the core cultural institutions of our societies. Although there are well-attended festivals worldwide, funded collaborative projects, discussion forums, and database documentation projects, media art is still rarely collected by museums, not supported within the mainframe of art history, only a little bit, and relatively bad accessible for public and scholars. Even if today media art, with its multifarious potential of expression and visualization, which thematizes complex challenges of our societies, like globalization, knowledge explosion, genetic engineering, ecological crises, etc., quantitatively is dominating the art schools, at least those who I know in Germany and Austria and stuff, media art was almost ignored by most museums. The acquisition and maintenance can still not compete with traditional art media. Thus, due to the fast change in storage media, works that originated approximately 10 years ago can normally not be shown anymore, and most of us are familiar with that fact, I guess. And it is no exaggeration to state that we face the total loss of an art form from the early times of our post-industrial digital societies. So media art therefore needs as most of us know, as many bridges into our societies as possible. Conferences, text repositories, database projects, developing collective documentation and preservation strategies, new thesauri and new curricula for the next generation of teachers, artists and collectors. It is ironic that this loss takes place in a time where the world of images around us is changed as fast as never before. Images are advancing to new domains, new private platforms like YouTube, Flickr with its billions uploads, or Facebook that has received its 700 millionth member and is now the largest image archive in the world. Television became a zappy field of thousands of channels, now in 3D, and 3D experiences, as we know, a renaissance in cinema as well. Here you see previous booms of 3D in cinema's history. Large projection screens are invading our cities. I was just in Hong Kong and amazed how they amalgamate with the buildings there. Building surfaces melt ever more often with moving images, so that the old dream of talking architecture gets a whole new arsenal of options. Cell phones transmit movies in real time, and this might be a hoax, but it is just a prefiguration of stereoscopic images coming from insect drones we can be telepresent with in the near future. VJing, of course you know, represents a whole new amalgamation of music and moving images, and Google Street View and Google Earth step up the concepts of panoramic image spaces, including satellite views, for example, of our Center for Image Science in Göteborg. All this, let's say, visualization requires a so far unknown material base. Google runs, for example, 1 million servers in a dozen countries, even on the ocean, and processes 24 petabyte of user-generated data per day, and the several million people who died in the race for conflict minerals. Here you see a new 100 gigahertz IBM graph chip did not even receive a monument for the unknown victim. So, images' historical development between innovation, reflection, and iconoclasm reaches a new level of global complexity in the 21st century. Digital images became ubiquitous and key tools within the global reorganization of work, but these transformations have hit society to a large extent unprepared. I will not go deeper into that, but some results of our research you can find also in a newly published volume by MIT Press. And this is what it's about: hundreds of names of artists, of artworks, art trends, theory of media art and keywords presented in an enormous huge circle. 32 slices are offered as a subdivision into themes like representation, emotion, synesthesia, atmosphere, games, art as a spatial experiment. We find glimpses of a history of media art. Like other festivals which look into their own past, Gerhard Dirmoser has started to look into the history of Ars Electronica, which it has influenced now for nearly 30 years. Although some of his keywords may seem a bit condensed, others incomplete or not entirely apt, on the whole, it is a very successful visualization showing the tremendous development that media art has undergone in recent years. So compared to traditional art forms like painting and sculpture, media art, as we know, has a multifarious potential of expression and visualization, and therefore, although underrepresented at the art market, which is following other interests, as we know, it became, I would say, the art of our time. Please, painters, don't hate me for that. And as somebody who is working most of his life with drawings, an art historian, who knows that the concetto and the idea you can best find in the drawing and in the expression of the hand in the end. But still, I'm just talking about the potential. So thematizing complex challenges for our life and societies, as genetic engineering and the rise of post-human bodies, like ecological crises, like the image and media revolution with its explosion of human knowledge, the explosion of future cities, the domination of hermetic finance markets, and the tyranny of globalization, just to name a few. Media art has the larger potential to tackle that, to tackle these very complex and large phenomena. Visually powerful interactive media art, perhaps supported by databases or attached to the World Wide Web, is offering more and more degrees of freedom and evidently is much better equipped to deal with the challenges of our complex time than traditional art media can. Nevertheless, the art and image forms able to do that have not achieved, had not arrived in the core collecting institutions of our societies. So let's recall some of the artworks representing what I just said on the path leading towards installation-based digital art. Charlotte Davies transports us with Osmos or Ephemere into a visually powerful simulation of a lush mineral vegetable sphere, which we can explore via a body intimate interface. Classics, which provided more than 100 scientific articles, at least, but they were ignored by museums. Open-ended questions about the complicated ethical issues involved in the manipulation of DNA raises Eduardo Katz's installation Genesis with Unmakeable Love. Jeffrey Shaw and Sarah Kenderdine created in their Cybernetic Theater Reactor, a real-time augmented world of 30 humans inspired by Samuel Beckett's The Lost Ones. So in a dark space or even a prison camp formed by a hexagon of six rear projected silver screens for passive stereo viewing, this results in the, I would say, the most powerful reappearance of the phantasmagoria. Another most known artist of our time, William Kentridge, who is actually in a number of collections, since some of his installations may be also not so technically difficult, helps us to reflect on the media and image revolution, creating a historic perspective. So in 2007, he created a hybrid. So there should be a video starting now. He created a hybrid that had not existed before in the history of seeing. So using his 8-minute short, What Will Come Has Already Come, he links a hand-drawn animation film with a mirror anamorphosis, which appears connected now for the first time with moving images. Kentridge and Shaw stand for dozens of artists who try to create with their artistic expressions historic links, building thinking spaces on the maelstrom of ever new image media. Ignored by museums too was Gold Nika awarded Murmuring Fields, Monika Fleischmann and Wolfgang Strauss create a virtual space of philosophical thought on the media revolution where statements by Flusser, Virilio, Minsky and Weizenbaum are stored. A new type of a Denkraum, a sphere of thought. Victoria Wessner's Bodies Incorporated allows visitors to construct their own identities or avatars using a variety of web tools. The users can make a 3D representation of the body. In keeping with this corporate theme, references are made throughout the site to identity politics and other concepts used to separate and identify bodies, far from creating a sublime web utopia where bodies are finally freed from restraints, what many people see in there as well. And after the first decade of the 21st century, there are more and more people who say that the ever-increasing complexity of financial products is responsible for the crisis facing taxpayers all over the world to bail out banks with trillions of euros and dollars. But already more than a decade ago, the artist studio Asymptote proposed a 3D infoscape for New York Stock Exchange to manage financial data within a real-time virtual environment. It seems to be imperative for the financial markets and those who want to continue with that hermetic virtual economy to get a better image and with that a better idea of what they deal with. This might also help the public to set appropriate rules of what is allowed in the future before we get driven into the next mega crash. Ingo Günther's obsessive cartographic world processor on illuminated globes more and more appears as a clairvoyant prefiguration of the attempts to the visualization industries to make our complex time understood. Since the late 80s until now, he destroyed in his making process, he destroyed more than 10,000 globes following the attempt to visualize a more realistic image of economy, power, and all kinds of meaningful parameters. And with Johanna and Florian Dombois' Fidelio 21st Century, named after Beethoven's Fidelio. For the first time, a classical opera, a whole opera, was directed as an interactive virtual 3D experience. Protagonists embody music, follow the dramaturgic direction, and react to the interventions of the visitors. And stealing 1 million profiles from Facebook, Paolo Sirio and Alessandro Ludovico's Face to Facebook was a media hack performance through a social experiment, which produced 1,000 media coverages around the world, 11 lawsuit threats, 5 death threats, and 3 letters from the lawyer of Facebook. Filtering the Facebook profiles with face recognition software and then posting them on a custom-made dating website, sorted by their facial expression characteristics. Quote, our mission, as Ludovico points out, was to give all these virtual identities a new shared place to expose themselves freely, breaking Facebook's constraints and boring social rules. So, through ever new interface developments and inventions, our relationship with images experiences a never-ending transformation too, and makes us part of living images. These artworks, from net art to bio art, from interactive installations to database-supported art, both represent and reflect the revolutionary development that the image has undergone over the past years and deal with the key questions regarding the current image revolution. So media art deals with the questions and challenges of our time in a way traditional art media simply can't do. In the best humanistic traditions, it takes on the big questions, dangers, and proposes transformations, but it is ignored by most museums. And a technocultural society that does not understand its challenges, which is not open for art form of its time, is in trouble. So we know that media artists today are shaping highly disparate areas like time-based installation art, telepresence art, genetic and bio art, robotics, net art and space art, experimenting with nanotechnology, artificial or alive art, creating virtual agents and avatars, mixed realities, and database-supported art. These artworks both represent and reflect the revolutionary development, and as I just said, that the image has undergone over the past years. So, these are images which appear capable of changing interactively or even autonomously and formulating sometimes a lifelike, all-embracing audiovisual and sensory sphere where temporal and spatial parameters can be altered at will. But the evolution of media art has a long history, and now a new technological variety has appeared. However, this art cannot be fully understood without its history, which is why I agree with a plea the 98-year-old Rudolf Arnheim published in 2000 for integrating the new interactive and procedural worlds of images into the experiences and insights that have come down to us from the art of the past. His words sounded like a plea for an interdisciplinary image science. So image science and media studies help understand the function of today's image worlds in their importance for building and forming societies. With strong representation of art history, so Belting in 2007, Bredekamp 2003, the project of image science expands towards an interdisciplinary development that connects neuroscience, psychology, philosophy, like Sombach, communication studies, Müller 2003, emotions research, myself and Kyle, and other scientific disciplines. Recently, interdisciplinary scientific clusters have been built around the subject of the image that lies increasingly perpendicular to the human, natural, and technical sciences, which have succeeded in profiting from the paradigm image as well as from an increased disposition towards interdisciplinarity. Image science might be considered as a reservoir in which contemporary processes are embedded, like an anthropologic narration, but as well the political battleground where the clash of images is analyzed. Older definitions by Gottfried Böhm, Klaus Sachs-Hombach, or W.J.T. Mitchell of what an image is became problematical in the context of the digital image, in the digital age, of course. I shall therefore begin by quoting a carefully crafted definition by Thomas Hensel. So images are not reducible to a particular technology like graphic prints or neutron audiography, not to certain devices or tools like paintbrushes or telescope, not to symbolic forms like perspective, not to genres in the broadest sense like still life or a summation image, not to an institution like museum or lab, not to a social function, construction or diagnostics, not to practices and media like painting or Morse code, like not to materials like canvas or photographic paper, and or certain symbolism like Christian iconography or alphanumeric code, but they are virulent in all of them. And nowadays, it has become even more difficult. Images today, along with the cultures from where they originated, are on the move. Myriads of images flow with extreme mobility and fractions of a second around the globe as messages of transnational and transcultural communication. Images from formerly separate contexts are occupied, interpreted, amalgamated, and given new meanings, as we saw in Ludovico's work. What we are seeing is a shift in our image cultures, which are connected to international media, in the direction of a single image culture that increasingly operates transculturally. Formerly passive recipients who reflected on discrete works of art in a distanced yet intellectually active manner have now become interactive users with considerable degrees of freedom. What is more, they have become active mediators and facilitators of image worlds, as well as producers of the same. In that, they increasingly collect, modify, distribute, and position images selectively and strategically. New visual information arises not least through dialogue in which one or more networks are involved. The mise-en-scène of the images, singly or in clusters, their metamorphosis and their dissemination are significantly determined by the users of social networks. Vibrant subcultures develop unbeknown with a speed of image turnover that was hitherto unimaginable. Often something completely new arises from the contradictions, tensions, and differences which is manifested visually. Generally, this process is nothing new for theories of interculturalism, the fruitful fusion of Roman and Greek culture, for example, or the Christian and Islamic culture in medieval Spain demonstrated this over long periods of time. But new is that there are apparently no limits to acceleration of visual exchange processes, which, because of their multifaceted branching and connections, cannot be captured or analyzed by the instruments employed by the humanities in the 19th and 20th century anymore. So in addition to global icons, seemingly banal but actually highly complex as we know, there are also myriads of image clouds which overlay the globe like a second visual sphere. Not only the media art image revolution is interlinked more and more with the images on Facebook, now, as I said, the largest image archive in the world, Flickr, YouTube, etc., which offer never existing co-inspiration and co-revolution interferences in global image exchange. This is where different ways of seeing the world encounter each other and are negotiated actively. This is where the rudiments of a new culture form and inform. Nevertheless, if one wants to understand an image, at least in part, then it has to be considered in context. In context. And contexts are becoming more and more complicated due to the many different visual media. So, if ever the theory of a homogeneous or pure culture elevated ideologically and repeatedly misused had any validity, this idea is now virtually obsolete. On the other hand, a theory of culture that is playful and favors egalitarian exchange may be desirable, but it is rather naive when one considers the power of commercial global players to create global icons, the inroads of political control over the networks, language barriers, inadequate knowledge about digital cultural techniques, and the power of certain media concerns that are coming together to form cartels. Already in the 90s, it became clear that media art research is spread over many disciplines, and more the need became urgent to give it some common ground. That's why Media Art Histories, and was mentioned already, held its first international conference, Refresh, in 2005 through a collective process involving 30 advisors and a dozen session chairs, coordinating meanwhile more than 1,000 papers and applications on mediaarthistory.org. So finally held at Banff's New Media Center in cooperation with Leonardo, Refresh represented the wide array of 19 disciplines involved in the rapidly emerging field of media art histories, and some of the results, it was also mentioned, you can find in an anthology from MIT Press. And the good news is that through the success of Replace in 2007 in Berlin's House of World Cultures, and here in Melbourne, actually in this lecture hall in 2009, and Liverpool just some months ago, a conference series could be established, so that Riga 2013 is on its way, so be invited to show up there as well. So building bridges for media art means also to further the establishment of new curricula, as we developed the first International Master of Arts in Media Art Histories for working professionals with faculty members like Eki Huchtamo, Lev Mandowicz, Christiane Paul, or Sean Cubitt, which deals also with the practice and expertise in curation, collecting, preserving, and archiving of media arts. Students, meanwhile, come from five continents, and of course, there's also a Facebook forum, evidently, with more than 3,500 members. So the field of media art histories examines the sub-history of present-day image revolution in media art. So paradigms like artificial life, automata or telepresence, the history of panoramic perception and its knowledge with the related history of immersion, and the history of the phantasmagoria, for example, an image machine developed after the French Revolution, which is reflected nowadays by artists like Rosangela Reno's Experiencing Cinema, or Tony Oisler's Influence Machine, or works by Gary Hill or Laurie Anderson. Our archive of digital art counts many media artworks, which are, for example, part of the history of immersion, a recently recognized phenomenon that can be traced through almost the entire history of art in the West. So history has shown that there is cross-fertilization between large-scale spaces of illusion that fully integrate the human body, like 360-degree frescoes, the panorama, stereopticon, cineorama, IMAX cinemas, or the caves, and on the other hand, you have small-scale images positioned immediately in front of the eyes, like peep shows of the 17th century, stereoscope, stereoscopic television, sensorama, or head-mounted displays. On the media art landscape of recent years, it is even increasingly being sized by a phenomenon which has yet to receive significant research, classification, or analysis: the use of historic media configurations. Renowned artists like Douglas Gordon, William Kentridge, Olafur Eliasson, Zoe Beloff, Geoffrey Shaw, Misha Kubal, Maurice Benayoun, Rafael Lonzano Hammer, and others create optical experiments, panoramas, phantasmagoria, perspective theaters, dioramas, camera obscura, anamorphosis, magic lanterns, etc., reinterpreting old optical media. They contextualize our digital image revolution, helping the society to reflect which traditional art forms could and which traditional art form could do that. So this all sounds like redefining images in their historical dimension. Approaches of comparison are based on the insights that images act diachronic within a historical evolution and not function simply without any reference. Image science, or Bildwissenschaft, as it's called in German, now allows to write the history of the evolution of visual media, from peep show to a panorama, anamorphosis, stereoscope, magic lantern film, etc., to the virtual image space of computers. It has let me underscore, and that's why I also agree with Zielinski, although I'm not so happy with this a little bit unorthodox or a little bit unorganized work sometimes. So let me underscore: an evolution with breaks and detours, however, all its stages are distinguished by a relationship between art, science, image, and media. So the integration and comparison of a new image form within art history is not a new method. There were different historic forerunners inspired by Darwin's work. The expression of the emotions, A.B. Warburg began a project of an art historical psychology of human expression. His famous Mimosyne image atlas from 1929 tracks image citations of individual poses and forms across media, and most significantly, independent from the level of art nouveau en genre. He redefined art history as a media bridge building. Warburg argued that art history could fulfill its responsibility only by including most forms of images. The atlas, which has survived only as photograph clusters, is fundamentally an attempt to combine the philosophical with the image historical approach, and Warburg arranged his visual materials by thematic areas. And let us remember, too, that film studies were started by art historians, an initiative by Alfred Barr, and Erwin Panofsky founded the enormous film library at the New York MoMA, called by its contemporaries the Vatican of Film. This way, film research already in the 1930s possessed a dominant image science approach and cultivated it further. This initiative allowed the large-scale comparison of film for the first time. The same spirit concerned with new investments for infrastructures to provide for and analyze the media art of our time is needed in the digital humanities. So if we just look to the 30s, so we have already part of the solution. Although taking a different approach, the history of image databases should also mention André Malraux with his Musée Imaginaire, and now we are witnessing the birth of the Virtual Museum, a key project for the digital humanities. But let us watch for a moment beyond the humanities to see what other fields are, in which kind of structures other fields now working. In the natural sciences, during the last decade, large collective projects could address new research goals, as in astronomy, the Virtual Observatory compiles centuries worth of celestial observations. Global warming is understood with projects like the Millennium Ecosystem Assessment at a detail never before calculable, and the Human Genome Project became already legend. So far unknown collective structures give answers to complex problems. Comparable with natural sciences, digital media and network research catapult the humanities within reach of new and essential research like documentation and preservation of media art, or even better, an entire history. It's my dream, of course, as an image historian, image scientist, or an entire history of visual media and the human reception by means of thousands of sources. These themes express in regard to image revolution current key questions. From 1999, we originated at Humboldt University in Berlin the first online media art documentation, the database of virtual art. As pioneer, it has been documenting in cooperation with renowned artists, researchers, and institutions the last decades of digital installation art as a collective open source project. Since today's digital artworks are processual, ephemeral, interactive, multimedia, and fundamentally context dependent, because of the different structure, they required a modified, we called it, an expanded concept of documentation. I don't go into details here, but you just get an idea that documentation for interactive artworks is much more complex, has much more requires much more data, a larger data structure than traditional art media. As probably the most complex media art resource available online, with several thousand documents and their technical data, more than 2,000 listed articles, and a survey of 750 institutions of media art, the database became a platform for information and communication. The system allows artists and experts to upload the information, and the DVA relies on its advisory board, represented by Christiane Powell, Roy Eskett, or Jorge Laferla. Let me clarify that the DVA represents the scientific selection of 500 artists of approximately 5,000, so it's easy to remember, evaluated artists. The policy whether an artist is qualified to become a member is the number of exhibitions and or publications, at least 5, awards and public presentations, and high importance we ascribe also to artistic inventions like innovative interfaces or displays or software. In addition to searches of themes, media art documentation should also admit questions of gender, so this is for the future, track the movement of technical stuff from lab to lab, technical inventions pertaining to art, the destinations of public and private funds allocated to research, and the hybrid character of media art requires a shift of the paradigm towards an orientation of process and context recording, which includes more and more the capture of the audience experience. So how was that artwork experience today, but maybe 10 years ago, which is also changing over time? Media art documentation becomes a resource that facilitates research on the artists and their work for students and academics who, it is hoped, now in a new Facebook-like communication structure will contribute to expanding and updating the information. In this way, documentation changes from a one-way archiving of key data to a proactive process of knowledge transfer. And now, together with an important unknown art collection, or not so known art collection, the Godwijk print collection representing 30,000 prints emphasizing Renaissance and Baroque works, and a library of 150,000 volumes going back to the 9th century, like the St. Gallen Codex, the database of virtual art strives to achieve the goal of a deeper media art historical cross-pollination. So reaching to the present day, the print collection has grown to be the largest private collection of historical graphic art in Austria, just as the Media Art Histories Conference series bridges a gap. The combination of the two and other databases hopes to enable further historic references and impulses. The collection also contains proofs of the history of optical image media, the intercultural concepts, caricatures, illustrations of landscapes, and in panoramic illustrations. For the future, this may provide resources for a broader analysis of media art. So we are in the fortunate situation that we have this contemporary database of media art, but also a historic database, and there's no institution at the moment in the world who has the possibility not to amalgamate them, but to bring them in connection and to show the forerunners of media art, but also show the afterlife of historic art forms. And of course, there are many differences, but how more you compare, how more differences you can also show. And there are some four strategies at the moment how we go through this, how we make this historic collection public. The scientific facsimile or digitization center digitizes with up to 72 million pixels. You see the detailed digitization of this beautiful hand of a colleague, which seems already a little bit impolite. The concept of virtual exhibitions, now adopted by main museums, addresses since 2006 the public with online exhibitions like Venetian Views or Theory of Architecture. We have cinema screen sized projections, which give a new access to details. Digitizing prints can be connected in filmic fly-throughs, allowing traveling through time and space. And I've just mentioned that we have this situation where we have these two databases in one place. So, and as you know, keywording can be bridge building as well. And here, the hierarchical thesaurus of the DVA constitutes an approach to systemize the field of digital art out of the Getty Arts and Architecture Thesaurus and the subject catalog of the Warburg Library in London. Keywords were selected, which have relevance also in media art, and all this to bring these two archives together. And of course, also we go to the festivals like Ars Electronica, ISEA, Transmediale, etc., where also keywords are adapted. And we ended up now, it was 350 keywords, which is as a condensation so that artists still can work with it, and scholars and even students, so that they themselves can keyword artworks. So that's all the idea to make this public, it is public, to make it usable for non-professional archivists, but also for the field. So let me finish with remarks on the challenging and serious situation of media art research today. With the DVA involved in the field of media art tool development from its beginning, we witnessed the crises of documentation during the last years. Since the foundation of the Database of Virtual Art in 1999, and until now it's on and ongoing, a number of online archives have arisen. The Langlois Foundation in Montreal, Netzspannung at the Fraunhofer Institute, or Medienkunstnetz at ZKM, and the Boltzmann Institute for Media Art Research in Linz. All these major projects of the field terminated, their funding expired, or they lost key researchers like Vitour in Rotterdam. In this way, the originated scientific archives, which more and more often represent the only remaining contextualized image source of the works, do not only lose their significance for research and preservation, but in the meantime partly disappear from the web. So not only the media art itself, but also its scientific documentation fades, that future generations will not be able to get an idea of the art of our time. Even the Europeana, a large but underfunded project for Europe-wide networks of digital collection documentation, is rendered meaningless if the foundation, so the archives themselves, are not continued. To put it another way, till now, no sustainable strategy exists. If we take a look on media art research over the last 15 years, then it is clear what we need is a concentration of high-quality scholarly documentation as well as a huge expansion of strengths and initiative. In the field of documentation, systematic preservation campaigns do not exist so far. In the field of documentation, it is essential to unite the most important lessons learned and strategies developed by initiatives either existing or abandoned under the single roof of an international institution that can guarantee persistent existence, such as the Library of Congress or an equivalent international institution. It would need to be supported with adequate expertise from the network of important archives and initiatives organized perhaps like in a corona around the long-lasting institution. This could be the best way to protect documentations from being lost. But also the establishment of an appropriate research institution bringing together the best heads of the field would be necessary. In Germany we have the Max Planck Institute format, which might be a possible format for that. So the European Commission expressed the goal to double funds for pilot projects in interdisciplinary fundamental research. But this is not enough. For up-to-date digital humanities, the funding structures must be internationalized in ways similar to those enabling modern astronomy, genomics, or climatology. In order to create enough momentum and the necessary sustainability, responsible sponsors like National Science Foundation, ARC, Deutsche Forschungsgemeinschaft, etc., have to ensure international, long-term sustainable structures. Only when we develop systematic and concentrated strategies of collecting, preservation, and research, we will be able to fulfill the task which digital culture demands in the 21st century. In astronomy, the funding agencies developed and modernized their system towards sustainability. The virtual observatory infrastructure is funded on an ongoing basis, and there is international coordination between a dozen or so countries that produce astronomical data. For media art research, a commitment by the best experts from the field is needed in a long-term occupation. Let's recall the enormous and sustaining infrastructure that was developed for traditional artistic media, painting, sculpture, architecture, even film, photography, and their corresponding archives over the course of the last century. What is needed is an appropriate structure to preserve at least the usual 1-6%, I don't talk about everything, only 1-6% of present media art production, the best works, if we compare the worldwide available budget for traditional art forms with the one for digital culture, then we understand how inadequate the support for our present digital culture is. It is almost statistically immeasurable. The faster this essential modification of our cultural heritage record can be carried out, the smaller the gap in the cultural memory, shedding light on the dark years which started about 1960 and last till now. As recently expressed in an international declaration signed by more than 300 50 scholars and leading artists so far. There is urgent need to create a stable international platform of interoperable archives of expertise and support for important regional histories and to internationalize research modes of interpretation and shared resources. We intend to establish an appropriate scientific structure to document and preserve, to promote study and appreciation, to create a permanent resource for future scholars, artists, curators, and creative engineers, and to make major interventions in the understanding of media as the basic functioning of society. So you're very welcome to sign this declaration too. You can find it on mediaarthistory.org, and there you have also the list of all the signatories, people who signed it. So hearing and hearing that there are experts of contemporary traditional art forms like sculpture, painting, etc., that try to exclude the art of our time with the widest need is sad, and ironically, as we learned from Schenken, Cubitt, and Thomas, the exponents of an exclusion of media art justify this with its connection with technology. This confession truly is a disaster, not so much for the interests of those people, but for the tax-paying public. And it's important to look at the tax-paying function here, who deserves the right to be enabled to think about our time through media art. It might be blindness, it seems more a desire to keep life easy and save the time needed to understand the immense complexity of media art and its preservation needs. But this ignorance is not something we should just tolerate. It means that although our societies, the political, financial, and culture, are more and more driven by modern technologies, the art market, a number of biennales and most contemporary art museums deny the public, which pays their bills, the needed aesthetic and intellectual confrontation with the art of our time. But the attempt to separate art from its time is not new. It is also comparable with earlier movements of world escapism, like the forms of the 19th century historicism. But our modern societies need to be enabled to reflect on their time and future, and as we know, media art plays a seminal role in this process. So as we see, media art needs as many bridges as possible, conferences, new scientific tools like databases and text repositories, new strategies for documentation and visual analysis of complex data, new curricula for the next generation of teachers and collectors. So maybe in the near future, we can create collective tools as represented in Christa Sommerer and Laurent Mignonneau's work, The Living Web, which generates a spatial information sphere from search engines for web images in a cave. The work represents a new instrument for visual analysis with the option of comparing up to 1,000 images in a scientific discussion. Captivating new visualization tools could provide access to the breadth of digital cultural production coupled with the depth of historical optical media. New unpredictable understandings of today's image revolution can be enabled. Thank you very much for the attention.